They pushed, pulled, tore, shook, and hammered, and clang-bang, crash-crack. In 5 minutes, they had these huge gates just lying in ruin, and some were already beginning to eat into the walls, like rabbits in a sandpit. I don't know what Saruman thought was happening, but anyway, he didn't know how to deal with it. His wizardry may have been falling off lately, of course, but anyway, I think he hasn't much grit. Not much plain courage alone in a tight place without a lot of slaves and machines and things, if you know what I mean. Very different from old Gandalf. I wonder if his fame was not all along mainly due to his cleverness in settling at Isengard.
No, said Aragorn. Once he was as great as his fame made him. His knowledge was deep, his thought was subtle, and his hands marvellously skilled, and he had a power over the minds of others. The wise he could persuade, and the smaller folk he could daunt. That power he certainly still keeps. There are not many in Middle-earth that I should say were safe, if they were left alone to talk with him, even now when he has suffered a defeat. Gandalf, Elrond, and Galadriel, perhaps, now that his wickedness has been laid bare, but very few others.
The Ents are safe, said Pippin. He seems at one time to have got round them, but never again. And anyway, he didn't understand them, and he made the great mistake of leaving them out of his calculations. He had no plan for them, and there was no time to make any, once they'd set to work. As soon as our attack began, the few remaining rats in Isengard started bolting through every hole that the Ents made. The Ents let the men go, after they'd questioned them, 2 or 3 dozen only, down at this end. I don't think many orc folk of any size escaped. Not from the Horns. There was a wood full of them all around Isengard by that time, as well as those that had gone down the valley. When the Ents had reduced a large part of the southern walls to rubbish, and what was left of his people had bolted and deserted him, Saruman fled in panic. He seems to have been at the gates when we arrived. I expect he came to watch his splendid army march out. When the Ents broke their way in, he left in a hurry. They didn't spot him at first, but the night had opened out, and there was a great light of stars, quite enough for Ents to see by, and suddenly Quickbeam gave a cry.
The Tree Killer! The Tree Killer!
Quickbeam is a gentle creature, but he hates Saruman all the more fiercely for that. His people suffered cruelly from orc axes. He leapt down the path from the inner gate, and he can move like a wind when he's roused. There was a pale figure hurrying away in and out of the shadows of the pillar, and it had nearly reached the stairs to the tower top. But it was a near thing. Quickbeam was so hot after him that he was within a step or two of being caught and strangled when he slipped in through the door. When Saruman was safe back in Orthonk, it wasn't long before he set some of his precious machinery to work. By that time there were many Ents inside Isengard. Some had followed Quickbeam, and others had burst in from the north and east. They were roaming about and doing a great deal of damage. Suddenly up came fires and foul fumes. The vents and shafts all over the plain began to spout and belch. Several of the Ents got scorched and blistered. One of them, Beachbone, I think he was called, a very tall, handsome Ent, got caught in a spray of some liquid fire and burned like a torch, a horrible sight. That sent them mad. I thought that they'd been really roused before, but I was wrong. I saw what it was like at last. It was staggering. They roared and boomed and trumpeted until stones began to crack and fall at the mere noise of them. Mary and I lay on the ground and stuffed our cloaks into our ears. Round and round the rock of Orthonk, the Ents went striding and storming like a howling gale, breaking pillars, hurling avalanches of boulders down the shafts, tossing up huge slabs of stone into the air like leaves. The tower was in the middle of a spinning whirlwind. I saw iron posts and blocks of masonry go rocketing up hundreds of feet and smash against the windows of Orthonk. But Treebeard kept his head. He hadn't got any burns, luckily. He didn't want his folk to hurt themselves in their fury, and he didn't want Saruman to escape out of some hole in the confusion. Many of the Ents were hurling themselves against the Orthanc rock, but that defeated them. It's very smooth and hard. Some wizardry is in it, perhaps, older and stronger than Saruman's. Anyway, they couldn't get a grip on it, or make a crack in it, and they were bruising and wounding themselves against it. So Treebeard went out into the ring and shouted. His enormous voice rose above all the din. There was a dead silence, suddenly. In it we heard a shrill laugh from a high window in the tower. That had a queer effect on the Ents. They'd been boiling over. Now they became cold, grim as ice, and quiet. They left the plain and gathered round Treebeard, standing quite still. He spoke to them for a little in their own language. I think he was telling them of a plan he had made in his old head long before. Then they just faded silently away in the grey light. Day was dawning by that time. They set a watch on the tower, I believe, but the watchers were so well hidden in shadows and kept so still that I couldn't see them. The others went away north. All that day they were busy, out of sight. Most of the time we were left alone. It was a dreary day, and we wandered about a bit, though we kept out of the view of the windows of Orthanc as much as we could. They stared at us so threateningly. A good deal of the time we spent looking for something to eat. And also we sat and talked, wondering what was happening away south in Rowan, and what had become of all the rest of our company. Every now and then we could hear in the distance the rattle and fall of stone and thudding noises echoing in the hills. In the afternoon we walked round the circle and went to have a look at what was going on. There was a great shadowy wood of Huorns at the head of the valley, and another round the northern wall. We didn't dare to go in, but there was a rending, tearing noise of work going on inside. Ents and Huorns were digging great pits and trenches, and making great pools and dams, gathering all the waters of the Eisen and every other spring and stream that they could find. We left them to it. At dusk, Treebeard came back to the gate. He was humming and booming to himself, and he seemed pleased. He stood and stretched his great arms and legs and breathed deep. I asked him if he was tired.
"Tired?" he said. "Tired? Well, no, not tired, but stiff. I need a good draught of Entwash. We've worked hard. We've done more stone-cracking and earth-gnawing today than we've done in many a long year before. But it's nearly finished. When night falls, don't linger near this gate or in the old tunnel. Water may come through, and it'll be foul water for a while, until all the filth of Saruman has washed away. Then Eisen can run clean again."
He began to pull down a bit more of the walls, in a leisurely sort of way, just to amuse himself. We were just wondering where it would be safe to lie and get some sleep, when the most amazing thing of all happened. There was the sound of a rider coming swiftly up the road. Mary and I lay quiet, and Treebeard hid himself in the shadows under the arch. Suddenly a great horse came striding up like a flash of silver. It was already dark, but I could see the rider's face clearly. It seemed to shine, and all his clothes were white. I just sat up staring with my mouth open. I tried to call out and couldn't. There was no need. He halted just by us and looked down at us. "Gandalf," I said at last, but my voice was only a whisper.
Did he say, "Hello, Pippin, this is a pleasant surprise"?
"No, indeed," he said.
"Get up, you tomfool of a Took. Where in the name of wonder in all this ruin is Treebeard? I want him, quick."
Treebeard heard his voice and came out of the shadows at once, and there was a strange meeting. I was surprised, because neither of them seemed surprised at all. Gandalf obviously expected to find Treebeard here, and Treebeard might almost have been loitering about near the gates on purpose to meet him. Yet we'd told the old Ent all about Moria. But then I remembered a queer look he gave us at the time. I can only suppose that he'd seen Gandalf or had some news of him, but wouldn't say anything in a hurry.
"Don't be hasty," is his motto,
but nobody, not even elves, will say much about Gandalf's movements when he's not there.
"Home, Gandalf," said Treebeard. "I'm glad you've come. Wood and water, stock and stone, I can master, but there is a wizard to manage here."
"Treebeard," said Gandalf, "I need your help. You've done much, but I need more. I have about 10,000 orcs to manage."
Then those two went off and had a council together in some corner. It must have seemed very hasty to Treebeard, for Gandalf was in a tremendous hurry, and was already talking at a great pace before they passed out of hearing. They were only away a matter of minutes, perhaps a quarter of an hour. Then Gandalf came back to us, and he seemed relieved, almost merry. He did say he was glad to see us then. "But Gandalf," I cried, "where have you been? And have you seen the others?"
"Wherever I have been, I am back," he answered in the genuine Gandalf manner. "Yes, I've seen some of the riders, but news must wait. This is a perilous night, and I must ride fast. But the dawn may be brighter, and if so, we shall meet again. Take care of yourselves, and keep away from Orthanc. Goodbye."
Treebeard was very thoughtful after Gandalf had gone. He'd evidently learned a lot in a short time and was digesting it. He looked at us and said,
"Well, I find you're not such hasty folk as I thought. You said much less than you might, but not more than you should. This is a bundle of news and no mistake. Well now, Treebeard must get busy again."
Before he went, we got a little news out of him, and it didn't cheer us up at all. But for the moment we thought more about you three than about Frodo and Sam, or about poor Boromir. For we gathered that there was a great battle going on, or soon would be, and that you were in it, and might never come out of it.
"Horns will help," said Treebeard.
Then he went away, and we didn't see him again until this morning. It was deep night. We lay on top of a pile of stone, and we could see nothing beyond it. Mist or shadows blotted out everything like a great blanket all round us. The air seemed hot and heavy, and it was full of rustlings, creakings, and a murmur like voices passing. I think that hundreds more of the Huorns must have been passing by to help in the battle. Later there was a great rumble of thunder away south, and flashes of lightning far away across Rohan. Every now and then we could see mountain peaks, miles and miles away, stab out suddenly, black and white, and then vanish. And behind us there were noises like thunder in hills, but different. At times the whole valley echoed. It must have been about midnight when the Ents broke the dams and poured all the gathered waters through a gap in the northern wall, down into Isengard. The Huorn dark had passed, and the thunder had rolled away. The moon was sinking behind the western mountains. Isengard began to fill up with black, creeping streams and pools. They glittered in the last light of the moon as they spread over the plain. Every now and then the waters found their way down into some shaft or spout hole. Great white steams hissed up. Smoke rose in billows. There were explosions and gusts of fire. One great coil of vapor went whirling up, twisting round and round Orthanc, until it looked like a tall peak of cloud, fiery underneath and moonlit above. And still more water poured in, until at last Isengard looked like a huge flat saucepan, all steaming and bubbling.
"We saw a cloud of smoke and steam from the south last night, when we came to the mouth of Nan Cúrinir," said Aragorn. "We feared that Saruman was brewing some new devilry for us."
"Not he," said Pippin. "He was probably choking and not laughing any more. By the morning, yesterday morning, the water had sunk down into all the holes, and there was a dense fog. We took refuge in that guard-room over there, and we had rather a fright. The lake began to overflow and pour out through the old tunnel, and the water was rapidly rising up the steps. We thought we were going to get caught like orcs in a hole, but we found a winding stair at the back of the storeroom that brought us out at the top of the arch. It was a squeeze to get out, as the passages had been cracked and half blocked with fallen stone near the top. There we sat high up above the floods and watched the drowning of Isengard. The Ents kept on pouring in more water till all the fires were quenched and every cave filled. The fog slowly gathered together and steamed up into a huge umbrella of cloud. It must have been a mile high. In the evening there was a great rainbow over the eastern hills, and then the sunset was blotted out by a thick drizzle on the mountainsides. It all went very quiet. A few wolves howled mournfully, far away. The Ents stopped the inflow in the night and sent the Isen back into its old course. And that was the end of it all. Since then the water's been sinking again. There must be outlets somewhere from the caves underneath, I think. If Saruman peeps out of any of his windows, it must look an untidy, dreary mess. We felt very lonely. Not even a visible Ent to talk to in all the ruin, and no news. We spent the night up on top there, above the arch, and it was cold and damp, and we didn't sleep. We had a feeling that anything might happen at any minute. Saruman's still in his tower. There was a noise in the night, like a wind coming up the valley. I think the Ents and Huorns that had been away came back then. But where they've all gone to now, I don't know. It was a misty, moisty morning when we climbed down and looked round again, and nobody was about. And that is about all there is to tell. It seems almost peaceful now, after all the turmoil, and safer, too, somehow, since Gandalf came back. I could sleep. They all fell silent for a while. Gimli refilled his pipe.
"There's one thing I wonder about," he said as he lit it with his flint and tinder. "Wormtongue. You told Théoden he was with Saruman. How did he get there?"
"Oh, yes, I forgot about him," said Pippin. "He didn't get here till this morning. We just lit the fire and had some breakfast when Treebeard appeared again. We heard him homing and calling our names outside."
"I've just come round to see how you're faring, my lads," he said, "and to give you some news. Huorns have come back. All's well. Aye, very well indeed."
He laughed and slapped his thighs.
"No more orcs in Isengard, no more axes, and there will be folk coming up from the south before the day is old, some that you may be glad to see.